All right, good morning, everybody. Good afternoon. This is fourth in our installment of the series of the Six Habits of Highly Effective Jewish People. And our topic for today's shiur is anger, which is a little bit different than the first three that we've done in the sense that this is one in which we're focusing on a negative. That is to say, avoid at all costs. The thesis of today's shiur, I'll tell you the end right at the beginning. Avoid anger. Anger is, without a doubt, one of, if not the most destructive character trait a person can have. And the more that we can avoid anger, the more we can develop a personality which isn't even provoked, let alone, if we are provoked, then deal constructively with that without pouring out our wrath on the people nearest and closest to us, the more successful we will be and the happier we will be, as well as all the people who are near and dear to us. That's the thesis. Now let's see where we can demonstrate that through the incredible wisdom of the Torah and Chazal. What I'd like to posit as we start, the first part of the shiur will be about the negatives of losing your temper, and then the second part of the shiur we'll flip the coin and see the positives of being able to control one's anger and control one's temper. But I'd like to posit that Chazal and the various Torah sources can actually be understood to be making two separate critiques of the midah of kaas, of anger. The first is evidenced in source number one, a brief statement in the Mishnah in the fifth parak of Perkei Avos, where the Mishnah is describing various midos that a person can have. Some are wrong, some are merely naive and foolish, and others are, you know, of course, wonderful. But the example that the Mishnah there gives as someone who is absolutely wicked, a rasha, is someone who is noach licho, someone who is fast and quick to anger. And conversely, someone who it takes a long time to get him to or her to forgive you or to calm down. But someone who has a quick trigger, right? We know people like this. This describes, unfortunately, all sorts of people who are noach lichos. It's not just that they get angry, but they're fast to anger. That the Mishnah calls actually a rasha. Moreover, in source number two, the Gemara in Shabbos very famously and in a very extreme formulation, admittedly very extreme, the Gemara describes someone who is so angry that they're actually demonstrative in their anger. They're ripping things, they're breaking things, they're throwing things. Says the Gemara, "Yu abanecha ke'oved avodah zarah." It's as if the person is an idolater. Really, an amazing statement. And the Rambam in source number three, not only does he bring this down, as it were, lahalacha, the Rambam endorses it, the Rambam kind of reformulates it to make the point even more directly and more succinctly. If you look in source number three, on the third line, Amru Chachamim HaRishonim, Kol HaKoes, Ki Ilu Oved Avodas Kochavim. Anyone who gets angry, it's as if he or she has worshipped Avodah Zarah. Pretty an amazing, amazing statement. Many years ago, I heard from Rabbi Norman Lamb, Zichrono Livracha, who was the president of Rosh Yeshiva during my 10 years at YU. So I once heard him explain this, that basically the essence of idolatry is to place yourself, the essence of idolatry is to place anything at the center of one's universe. Hashem is supposed to be at the center of our universe, and every other aspect of our personality is supposed to, so to speak, revolve around that. We, of course, have all sorts of aspects of our lives, not all of which are directly related to Hashem. But Hashem is, so to speak, in the center, and everything revolves around that. Whenever a person replaces Hashem with something else in the middle, said Rabbi Lamb, that's a form of idolatry. And anger is very closely connected, not only in the world of the Rambam, but I think also just psychologically and intuitively, anger is very closely associated with arrogance, with ego. And said Rabbi Lamb, therefore, by placing yourself in the middle, that is in essence what gives you license to be angry, and that's why it is a derivative or a form of Avodah Zarah. Be that as it may, you take Rabbi Lamb's explanation or not, Chazal make the statement, the Rambam endorses it, and therefore it's not a surprise, perhaps, to read what the Rambam says in the beginning of source number three. The same source, just go up two lines. There, the Rambam makes the famous point. We discussed the other half of this Rambam in the previous year. But here, again, the very famous, world-famous Rambam, Hilchos Deos, in the second chapter, where the Rambam tells us, Yesh Deos she'asar lo la'adam linhog behen bibenius. That even though the Rambam is the famous articulator of the doctrine of the golden mean, of the Shvil HaZahav, passionate moderation, Nevertheless, the Rambam says there are two exceptions where a person should not be a moderate, a person should be an extreme. One, which we saw previously, was arrogance and humility. But the Rambam then says here, V'chein ha-ka'as, mida rahi ad lama'od, anger is a terrible, terrible character trait. Royal Odom Shiasrachik Mimen Arakatseacher. A person should try to go to the other extreme to avoid getting angry. I didn't include it on the sheet, but the Rambam here goes so far as to say that one might think that especially when it comes to parenting or teaching, there are times in life where it may be effective to get angry, to convey a point with passion, to make a strong impression. Nevertheless, says the Rambam, even in such a situation, a person is not allowed to get angry. Rather, says the Rambam, a person should feign anger in such a case. I always imagine, my kids, thank God, are a little bit older now, but I always imagine in my mind's eye when I think about that Rambam, when my children were younger, if you have younger grandchildren, and you're at the street, you're at the crosswalk, and Rahman al-Islam, you have that heart-stopping moment when your child or grandchild starts walking to the street, didn't look both ways, and you, of course, you know, you quickly thank God, hopefully you noticed, and you pull them back. Now, many parents, if I remember correctly, I think my parents at some point, and I know that I did this to my children at some point, when my kids did this, I didn't just say nicely in that circumstance, you know, didn't Abba tell you once before, hasn't Abba once told you that you shouldn't walk, you have to, no, I screamed. I might even have given a little bit of a light potch, I don't remember exactly, but I definitely screamed. Says the Rambam, you still have no right to get angry. But what you can do, if you think it's necessary, and there are cases, I just gave you one, and I'm sure there are other cases as well, says the Rambam, if you think it's necessary, then you can feign anger. Act as if you're angry, if you think that's what's necessary to make the point. But not to actually be angry, because as we just saw from the Rambam, there is no possible place legitimately for genuine anger. Says the Rambam, Roy l'odom shiyasrachik b'mena ad katzeach. You have to run to the other extreme and never get angry. And again, we can understand where the Rambam is coming from. The Gemara in Shabbos compared getting angry to Avodah Zarah. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says you're wicked, you're evil if you get angry too quickly. So these are obviously very strong statements of Chazal crystallized in the Rambam. All of this is making my first point, and I am leaving out many, many other sources that could confirm it. But our first and basic point is that Chazal have a very strongly critical posture towards getting angry. They condemn it. And on some level, it's considered rishus, it's considered evil, it's considered wicked. Point number one. However, I think it's equally important to note that when one looks at other statements of Chazal, which are also very critical of anger, but they actually have a different approach, a different focus. Starting with source number four, which is actually in Koheles. What does Koheles say about someone who gets angry? Ki ka'as b'cheik kisilim yanuach. Where does anger rest? In the lap of fools. Koheles calls someone who gets angry not wicked. Based on the previous sources we saw, we would have expected it to say wicked. That's not what the Koheles says. Megillas Koheles says, you are a fool if you get angry. Now, why should that be? What sense is it foolish? Let's hold that thought, hold that question. Source number five, Gemara tells us something else very intriguing. Lo tirtach, lo tachti. Lo tirtach means if you don't get hot. Literally, it means don't get hot. You won't sin, says Rashi. You see there in the brackets, source number five. Lo tichos. If you don't get angry, you won't sin. Shemitoch akas atabot lidei chet. So first of all, it's just striking that already in the time of the Gemara, they have the same expression that we have, right? We also use the term, we associate getting hot with getting angry, right? Getting hot under the collar. I don't know the earliest human reference to such a phrase, but the Gemara must be one of the earlier ones, which is associating getting angry and getting hot. So says the Gemara, don't get hot, don't get angry, and you won't sin. But it's not exactly clear from the Gemara, and even Rashi, it's not exactly clear what the connection is. What exactly is the point here of the Gemara? From the earlier sources, we would have thought that don't get angry, because getting angry is itself a sin. But that's not what this Gemara says. The Gemara seems to be saying something else. That anger will lead you to other sins. But why should that be? Another question. I want you to hold that thought. And thirdly, our third question, I promise you, we'll get to an answer in a moment after that. But our third question, source number six, amazing, amazing Gemara. Psachim, daf samach vav amebet. Kol odom shekoes, a person who gets angry. Im chacham hu, Chachmaso mistalekes mimenu. Even if he's a major Talmud scholar, a major Talmud Chacham, in his moment of anger, will lose the Chachma, will lose the wisdom. Im Navihu, Nivuoso mistalekes mimenu. If it's a prophet, will lose the power of prophecy, will forget their prophecy because they got angry. Where do we know this from? So the Gemara gives the two proofs. Second line, source number 6. Chacham hu, we read it only a few weeks ago with Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, Parshas Chukas, and then we see other times where Moshe is punished. Even more recently, we read about this. When Moshe got angry, he forgot the halacha. He didn't know the halacha. Even Moshe, when he got angry, we know a few times in the Torah where Moshe gets angry, and he forgets a halacha. Furthermore, says the Gemara, in the next part of the line, Im Navihu Nivuasa Mistalekes, if he's a prophet, he'll lose his prophecy. And it gives a proof test from Elisha. And then finally in the third line, the Gemara says, incredibly, Kol shekoes afilu poskin olav gidula min hashamayim, moridin oso. If a person gets angry, even if they were already predestined in Shamayim for some incredible reward, some incredible honor, it was already determined that they would get a certain honor or reward, says the Gemara, moridin oso. We can take it away from him or her. Now, this is a scary thought, but it's not just scary. It's striking because we have generally a tradition that Hashem could, kavyachol, change his mind. If he was going to punish us, he can have his mind changed to not punish us. But generally, when Hashem has already decided to reward someone, we have a tradition, he doesn't go back on that. And yet, says the Gemara here in this instance, if you get angry, even post can love gedulah min hashamayim, Hashem can take that away from you. And how do we know it, says the Gemara, from Eliav. Eliav was one of the older brothers of David HaMelech. And the Gemara explains that he was really the one who was destined to be the king, not David HaMelech. And then he got angry. We don't have time now to get into the situation. There's a lot to learn from the case the Gemara brings, but we don't have time for that now. But because of that, he lost out on, you know, basically an incredible honor. I'll say it this way. How many people on the Shir have even heard of Eliav? Right? Most of us have not. But David HaMelech, right? That's the most famous name maybe in all of Judaism. It could have been Eliav. My name could have been Eliav. Who knows? I'm David. But no, I don't know too many people named Eliav now. Right? And he lost it all, says the Gemara, because he got angry. And again, if you're looking to make the point that anger is bad, this Gemara is a great, you know, proof text, right? Pretty dramatic. But if we stop and think about it, it begs the question, why? In all of these cases, why should it be? Why just because I got angry should I lose my Torah? Why should I lose my Nevuah? And why, if Hashem has already determined that I deserve some great kavod, a great position of honor or leadership, why should I lose it? So I'd like to suggest that the answer to all of these questions can be found in a remarkable insight in source number 7. And I believe that this is the second point where we see Chazal condemning and criticizing anger. Again, we've seen the first one was that it's wicked, it's rishus, it's like avodah zarah. But I want to suggest now that all of these sources can be understood as making a second and different point. If you recall, in source number 4, Koheles referred to someone who gets angry as a fool. In what sense is the person a fool? And again, in what way does anger lead to other sins? In what way does anger make you lose your chachma or your nevuah? And why should you lose your honor? So in source number 7 is a selection from a very thin sefer known as the Birkas Peretz. It's a commentary on the Chumash, a very thin volume, written by somebody who's known as the Stipler Gaon, more well known for his Chidushim on the Gemara, but he has a single volume on the Chumash. I guess in today's generation, he might be more well known as Chaim Kanievsky's father. But before he was known as Rechaim, I assume you get a lot of nachas from that. But before he was Rechaim Kanievsky's father, he was a great gadol in his own right, originally in the area of Russia and Eastern Europe, and then eventually making his way to Israel and Bnei Brak. And in source number 7, the Birkas Peretz has a remarkable insight. He is discussing the world famous pasuk and medrash that deals with the frogs in Mitzrayim. We know that the second plague that Moshe brought onto the Egyptians, I guess more technically should say Aaron, but Aaron and Moshe, was Makas Tzvardeya. However, again, I didn't give you the Rashi and the Pasuk because it's familiar to you, but I'll just mention it Ba'al Peh. Rashi notes from Chazal that there's an inconsistency in the Pasuk, that when Moshe is told that they'll bring a plague of frogs. The term is in plural, tzvardiim. Many frogs will blanket Egypt. However, when Aaron takes the staff and hits the Nile, the pasuk is very clear, v'ta'al es ha tzvardea, in the singular, that one frog, a frog, came out of the Nile. Well, which one is it? Was it a frog? Was it many frogs? And it's not just a question of linguistics or diktuk and inconsistency, just commonsensically. What does that mean to say one frog came out of the Nile, right? That wouldn't be much of a plague, right? We imagine millions of frogs blanketing Egypt. So what's going on? So Rashi here quotes the famous Medrash that in fact, only one frog came out of the Nile. However, what happened? The Egyptians hit the frog, and depending on which kindergarten you went to, or which model Seder your grandkids go to or sing a song to, there's different versions of this. Either they say that the Egyptians hit the frog and it split, or actually the way Rashi quotes it is each time they hit the frog, it spit out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other frogs. And they kept on hitting the frog, and eventually, Egypt is covered and blanketed in frogs. Okay, that's the background. Comes along the Stipler, source number 7, and he asks a very simple question. And I admit, my whole childhood, my young adulthood, I always knew this Rashi, this Chazal. It never dawned on me this question. But he says a very simple, basic question. Why did they keep on hitting the frog? Egypt is a very big country. If this was such a intrusive and debilitating plague, there must have been millions upon millions of frogs. After all, you know how the song goes, right? Frogs here, frogs there. Frogs everywhere. I won't finish it, don't worry. This is an adult, even though this is an adult program, I won't finish that song, right? Hamevin Yavin. So, how could have there have been millions of frogs? Says the Stipler, I understand. You hit the frog once, you think you're going to kill it, and instead, it makes the problem worse. Okay, maybe you try a second time. You had one kind of stick, now a different kind of stick. After a few tries, you see you're not making the problem better. If anything, you're making the problem worse. Just stop hitting the frog. How many frogs would there have been? A few hundred, a few thousand, nothing. If there was a terrible plague, it must be that they didn't stop hitting the frog, which led to millions of frogs blanketing Egypt. Why would they do that? Why were they so foolish? That's the question of the Stipler. So says the Stipler, where it's underlined, he said the key to understanding this is because the Egyptians were plagued by the Midah of Kas. They got angry. Ma Midas HaKas Omeres Adaraba. Once you get angry, what happens? You tell yourself, Kevin Shemosifa La'atiz Kol Shekein V'Kol Shekein Tzitricha La'osif L'isnak Keim La'koso K'chol Efshar. In other words, says the Stipler something very simple. Why do we get angry, in many cases, when a certain expected and predictable result of our action is not forthcoming? We did or said something and we expected the response to be X. When it doesn't happen, we get angry. When the Egyptians hit the frog, they thought for sure they're going to kill the frog. Everything's going to be okay. Instead, the frog, so to speak, rebelled. It didn't do what they expected. And instead, it made the problem worse. So in that one moment, this is a critical moment, says the Stipler. How did they respond? Says the Stipler, they responded with anger. They got angry. So what happens when you get angry? You do it again. But this time I'm going to hit it harder. But what happened when they hit it a second time even harder? Even more frogs came out. What did that cause the Egyptians to do? To get more angry. What happened when they got more angry? They hit the frog again, but even harder. And what happened when they hit the frog even harder? Even more frogs came out. Again and again and again, a vicious cycle. They got on the hamster wheel and they couldn't get off. Says the Stipler, this is what anger does. This is what anger does. And says the Stipler in the continuation, lest you think we're so smart, we're so sophisticated, we're not like those foolish Egyptians. Says the Stipler, we all have a little bit of an Egyptian inside of us. He gives one example, but there could be so many others, of a person who unfortunately is insulted or their feelings are hurt. You could just let it go. It would be, I'm not saying it would be nothing, it's something, but it would still be relatively minor. But what happens? When you get angry, you respond in kind, which causes the person who originally said whatever or did whatever to respond further in kind. And everything escalates, and before you know it, it's World War III, and before you know it, you don't even remember why you got angry in the first place. Says the Stipler, we're just like the Egyptians. If we would just pause and think, one second, does this make sense or not? We would stay in control. In other words, and here's the key point, ladies and gentlemen. The key point, says the Stipler, I think this is his profound insight. The problem with anger is that it's an expression of a lack of self-control. When we get angry, we lose control. Our temper takes over. It's as if we're not in control of ourselves. And any one of us who've gotten really angry know exactly that feeling. Says the Stipler, that is a profoundly problematic position to be in. A Jew must be in control at all times. The whole Yiddishkeit is predicated on being in control. In control does not guarantee we'll make the right decisions, but at least we have a chance when we stay in control. The particular problem with anger, what makes it so unique and so insidious and so dangerous, is that it means we lost control. That's why I would suggest that's what Kohelet meant when it said, if you get angry, you're a fool. Because just like the Egyptians, can someone remember the last time they got really angry and it made a situation better? Does that ever happen? At work, at home, in our marriage, with our children? I'm guilty of this, unfortunately. I've given a lot of shurim on this because I'm hoping at some point it'll finally sink into my thick head. I can look back on so many examples. When's the last time it got better? I know many times it got worse because I got angry. It's foolish, and we all know that rationally. But when we get angry, when we get triggered, we lose control. And that is why anger leads to other sins. Because once we get angry, we lose control. We might speak Lashon Hara, we might curse, we might say other things that are hurtful that we wouldn't, and God forbid, Rahman al-Islam, we might even lose our temper and become physically violent. Because we've lost control. The kernel of anger is a loss of control. That's also why a person who loses control is not worthy of the Nevuah or the Chachma, and certainly not of being a leader of Klal Yisrael. There are so many demands for what it means to be a Navi, a Chacham, let alone a leader. But the most basic one is the ability to stay in control. And when we lose that, we've lost everything. And I want to suggest, as I've been stressing, that this is different than the first point we made. Anger is not only evil and wrong, it's also foolish. Briefly, let's flip to the other side of the coin, because that also exists in Chazal, and that's very, very important. And that is source number 8, the Gemara in Pesachim says, one of the people that Hashem loves, Ohavam, is someone who doesn't get angry. Furthermore, not a surprise, in Mishlei, number 9, it refers to someone who doesn't get angry as Seichel Adam. You're very smart. It's wisdom. It's wise not to get angry. Why is it wise? Exactly as we saw. Just like Kohelet said, it's foolish to get angry. The mirror, the flip side of Kohelet's foolishness is Mishlei Seichel. Because if a person, even when provoked and even in a difficult situation, can remain calm and not lose their temper, i.e., not lose control, oh, that is a wise man, a wise woman indeed. Then you'll make right decisions. Then you'll deal with difficult situations in a calm way. But when you get angry, you lose control, that's foolish. Stay calm, that's seichel. And we saw the Gemara that said if you get angry, you can lose even predetermined positions of honor. Well, the opposite is also true in source number 10. The Sifrei says that if you are able to get along with people and don't get provoked, that can merit you great positions of leadership. According to the Sifrei, the reason that Yehoshua merited to be chosen to be the successor to Moshe, again, there are different opinions in Chazal as to why Yehoshua merited this, but at least according to source number 10, the reason Yehoshua merited to be the successor to Moshe was because he ish asher ruach bo. What does that mean, that Yehoshua was a man of the Spirit? He knew how to get along with people, to be a leader in any shul, in any community, in any organization. They're different kind of people. They're easier going people, more difficult people, more demanding people, more calm people, more loud, more quiet. A leader has to know how to get along with everybody and not be provoked, or not just get along with the people that are naturally in his wheelhouse or her wheelhouse, but not get along with the other people. To be a leader means to get along with everybody and know how to handle everybody. That was Yehoshua's ability. He wouldn't get angry. He wouldn't be provoked. He understood how to deal with everybody. Let's just to conclude, we only have a few more minutes. I want to conclude with an incredible insight, which I once thought of on my own, and then I'm happy to find out that one of the great Musar masters said it before me, so I can actually be more confident that it's actually true. The Gemara in Nedarim, source number 11, says that anyone who gets angry, kalakoes, kalmine gehenim sholtenbo, all forms of hell, all forms of gehenim, will be ruining over this person. So it's a little bit of a peculiar language. Again, just to say that, you know, anger is bad, you know, been there, done that. We've seen that already in a few sources. But here the Gemara describes mine Gehenim, right? I don't know exactly what Gehenim is, but I never heard that there was more than one of them, right? This is not like Dante's, you know, seven levels, right? I didn't think that was a Jewish idea, right? What are mine Gehenim? How many Gehenims are there? Right? There's one Olam Haba, one Gehenim. I hope I go to the former, but, you know, whatever they are, they are. But there's more than one. Kol mine Gehenim. What does that mean? So what I'd like to suggest, based on what we've said until now, and Baruch Hashem, Baruch Shekivanti, this is exactly what the famed Mashgiach Rav Yerucham says in source number 13. Kol mine Gehenim means not only because if a person gets angry a lot, that's as if they worship the Avodah Zarah. If you get angry a lot, you're probably speaking improperly to the people around you. You could get punished for that as well. Yes, it could be that after 120, if a person is an angry person, they'll go to Gehenim. But, and here's the key insight of the Gemara, which I think we'll now understand in light of everything we've seen. A person who's an angry person, a person who has a trouble controlling his or her temper, will not have to wait till after 120 to go to Gehenim, because his or her life will be a living hell. To be an angry person is to have a living Gehenim. To be married to someone who's angry is a living Gehenim. To have parents who are always angry is a living Gehenim. Kol mine Gehenim Sholtenbo. Yes, it'll be a very, you may sin a lot. Yes, it's a bad thing to get angry. Yes, you'll get punished after 120. But you won't have to wait till after 120 to get punished. You'll get punished, unfortunately, in this world as well. And this is, I think, a very important take-home message. And I want to conclude with a very quick story, which is just the flip side of that. And it's a story they say over of the name of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that once on Purim, he was giving out tzedakah, and the various poor people were waiting in line to collect money. And each time they would ask for the money, but after two or three times in line, Rav Chaim Volozhiner noticed that the same ani, the same poor person, kept on coming back for more. Each time he would change his hat, change his coat, try to put on some kind of a Purim disguise. But even though there were needy people and everyone was only supposed to come once, he kept on coming back two or three times. So after the third time, he finally confronted this person. He says, listen, let's just be honest between you and me. I know this is not the first time you're in line, but could you at least give me a Dvar Torah? You know, if you want to get, you know, take your third hand in the cookie jar, at least give me a Dvar Torah. So the Ani realizes he has no choice. He says, let me think. And he says the following idea from him. There's a Medrash that says that Mordechai asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he heard about Haman's decree, was it written in blood, dam, or was it written in ink, in dio, somewhere up in heaven? And the assumption being that if it was written in ink, it could be repealed. If it was written in blood, it couldn't. So asks Rav Chaim Volozhiner to this poor person, where did the Mishnah, where did the Gemara, where did Chazal even know this from? Like, how would they have known the answer? What is it talking about? Where did the Medrash get this from? So the poor person said, because the Pasuk says in Perek Gimel, when Haman says to Achashverosh, Imal HaMelech Tov Yikasev Le'abdam, if the king is in the right inclined, will you write a decree to kill them? Le'abdam. La'amad Aleph Beis Dalad Mem. So he says, don't read Le'abdam to destroy them, read it Lo Bedam. Not in blood, it's written in ink. So you see, Mordechai could save the day. What an incredible Dvar Torah. Wow, Rav Chaim Volozhiner thanks him. He gives him a generous donation. He can't believe it. This Ganef Shner, this guy, this Am Aretz, he has this incredible Chiddush. Rav Chaim Volozhiner is the Gadol Hador. He didn't know this idea. So he goes to see his Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon. He tells him the story. And the Vilna Gaon tells him, I'll tell you what happened. That wasn't a Stam Ganef. That was Eliyahu HaNavi. That was Eliyahu HaNavi. And you merited a Gilui Eliyahu. You know why? Because you could have gotten angry. By rights, you could have gotten angry. He provoked you. He was stealing. He was trying to trick you. But you remained calm. And because you didn't get angry, you were zoche to a giloy of Eliyahu HaNavi. So my bracha to all of us is, I'm not Rechaim Volozhiner or the Gra. I can't promise you Gilui Eliyahu. But I can promise you that if we learn the lessons of today's shir, then not only will we, Emir Tzashem after 120, be zoche to Olam Haba, but our lives will be a living Olam Haba. We won't have to wait till 120. We'll have happier lives, happier marriages, and happier families. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great day. Rabbi Brand, I turn it over to you. I am sorry for running late.